And I'm Chris Shoup. As the number of COVID-19 cases rise again, so do many questions about the Delta variant and what the next few months will look like. Here with us today are a panel of experts to talk about the state of the COVID-19 pandemic, past, present, and future. Welcome Dr. Grace Bagwell-Adams from the University of Georgia's College of Public Health, Dr. John Drake, Director of the UGA Center for the Ecology of Infectious Diseases, Dr. Amber Schmidtke from the University of St. Mary, and Dr. Neil Priest, recently retired emergency physician. Welcome to you all.
It's great to be here.
Thank you. Thanks,
Chris. It's good to join you again.
Well, I want to start with this pesky Delta variant. What do we know at this point about the variant and how it's different in terms of transmissibility and then, of course, the severity? Let's start with you, Dr. Adams.
Well, what we know about the Delta variant is that it is even more transmissible than the original version that we all faced and battled throughout 2020 and into the beginning of 2021. And the reason that this is concerning is because the time of exposure that it takes for a person to become sick has exponentially decreased with the Delta variant. So where we were looking at minutes of exposure leading to more cases with the first version, now we're thinking that it's really around seconds of exposure with the Delta variant.
Some of the early research is showing that the Delta variant seems to have a higher viral load, and that explains the increased transmissibility. What this means is that you have more copies of the virus inside your body. And so when you cough or sneeze, you're expelling that many more copies into the environment. And that's more shots on goal, so to speak, for the people that would be infected.
I think we need to emphasize here, this is a different beast because of what we've already talked about. The transmissibility is dramatically increased. Some people think that as many as 1,000 times a number of copies of the virus itself are transmitted by each individual person infected. And in addition, what that does is it shortens the incubation period. Some people think that the Delta might be as short as 4 days when the other one that we were facing was 6 days. And right. The combination of those two things makes it such that each individual person who has the Delta variant might infect six people. So if you just think through that, a few generations, like the previous variant we had, on the average was maybe 2 to 3 people that they infected. So let's just say it was 2. It goes 2, 4, 8, 16. Look at the same number of possible infections with the Delta variant. It goes 6, 36, 240 something to up to about 1,300. So by the time the old variant had infected 16 people, the Delta has potentially infected 1,300. So this is a COVID on steroids, and I do think it's a different beast.
Well, Dr. Priest, let's continue talking about the vaccine. Like, how effective are current vaccines in protecting against this Delta variant?
There are some new studies that show that the J&J vaccine might possibly be less effective against this Delta variant. It may only have a 30 to 40% efficacy. Many of the studies that have already been done show that the Moderna and the Pfizer do, for the most part, protect against this Delta variant. So that's I think that everybody here is going to agree with me on this, right? We have to get everybody vaccinated. We have to get everybody vaccinated. It's basically, other than social distancing and masking, is like our tool. That's our main tool.
Chris, I do agree with that. But it's also important to keep in mind that recent studies have shown that it's only with 2 doses of the mRNA vaccines that that efficacy remains high. Mm-hmm. And so for people who at this stage have only had 1 dose of the vaccine, it's really important to go ahead and get that second dose.
That's a good point from Dr. Drake there for our listeners. Well, I want to spin it back to you, Dr. Schmidtke. You wrote in a recent newsletter that Delta is a game changer for the virus. And I think we've talked a little bit about, obviously, how it is. But can you tell us a little bit more about how you feel, why you made that statement, and a little bit more about what's involved with the Delta really changing the pandemic?
In the past, you know, it's sort of been one of those things where a person is having to weigh, well, what are my chances of getting COVID in the first place? Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll roll those dice and just hope that I don't get it, or if I get it, that I get a mild case. And I think with Delta, what this does differently because of its increased transmissibility is it's really not an issue of whether you'll get COVID or whether you'll get exposed. It's a question of whether you want to get to immunity using the vaccine, which has been demonstrated to be safe and effective, or if you want to roll the dice of natural infection and all of the consequences and risks that come with that.
Well, let's move on to the healthcare infrastructure. Dr. Priest, what does that look like right now, and how prepared are we for another surge in cases?
Well, I mean, I think the short answer to that is we're much more prepared than we were for the first and second wave. That's almost certainly true. We've learned a lot, particularly about the treatment of this illness, and it probably will bear out that the treatment for the Delta is going to be quite similar to the treatment for the other variants. Right now, it depends on the region that you're talking about, right? This is the thing about this Delta variant it's certainly going to infect all kinds of people coming up. There's no question about that. And we have to sound the alarm about that. Its infectiousness is quite alarming. If you talk to almost any infectious disease experts or even pulmonologists, they're kind of scared about this. Right now, our local, particularly our local and even regional medical system is not particularly under strain with it, but this can happen very quickly. Look at the explosion of the Delta variant in the last 2 weeks. It's up 200% in 2 weeks. And it's going to hit pockets of places where there's low rates of vaccination, and it's going to hit those pockets hard. There's no doubt about this. If you look at Springfield, Missouri right now, is a classic example. You know, they've got a fairly robust medical system, let's say, but they're completely overwhelmed with this Delta variant right now because it was a region that had a low vaccination rate.
And Dr. Adams, what do you think are some of the danger signs to look for as if the obvious is that we're going to see cases rise? When do we really need to set off the alarm bells that our infrastructure might be getting close to a point where we're in trouble?
I think right now, I mean, it's really clear to Dr. Priest's point, you know, right now in Athens-Clarke County and in Georgia in general, we're not seeing the same kind of strain on the healthcare infrastructure that we saw in the big waves. But the time to sound the alarm bell is not when we've run out of beds and ventilators. The time to sound the alarm bell is before that. And the thing that we have to understand is, you know, the state of Georgia and many other states in the South and in even regions in across the U.S. are really in a race against Delta to get our citizens vaccinated. I mean, right now, you know, the state of Georgia has hovered for a while around 40% or a little less in terms of total eligible individuals who are vaccinated, fully vaccinated. Clarke County is right at about the same spot. And it's no longer a supply issue. The vaccines are readily available. We have really good evidence that the people who are vaccinated have reasonable amounts of protection, not just against COVID, but against the Delta variant, which we've discussed today. And so back to your question, Chris, the alarm bells should be going off for people who are not vaccinated and who are not fully vaccinated to get the vaccination, to get protected, because it really is a shame that we have this resource available and that it's free, readily available for folks who want to get vaccinated, but yet the majority of our population who are eligible in Georgia are still really not doing it. And so I think that the public health infrastructure has to dig deeper and to really think about how do we reach populations, not necessarily who can't get to the vaccine, but who are unwilling at this point, because it really is about willingness and capability. And I think we really have to think about how to do that and do that quickly, because again, we're racing against time here with the Delta variant, especially in rural areas in the state.
And what's the answer really? I mean, is it in messaging? Should our public health officials be racing to do more messaging, like television ads and trying to get the word out to encourage people more? And then the other thing that I think would help, and I believe I heard this morning on Morning Edition, that the full FDA approval is something that some people are using as a reason not to get the current vaccine, which is approved for emergency use. And from what I heard, that's something that could happen pretty soon. Dr. Drake, what do you know about that?
So I think I can answer a couple of the questions that you've sort of been asking. You asked briefly about compromising the health system, and that really has to do with the size of what we might start to call the Delta wave. We heard at the beginning of this panel that the transmissibility of the Delta variant is roughly twice what the original variant was. Mm-hmm. What people may not know is that the reproduction number is actually proportional to transmissibility. So that means that we should expect the Delta variant to move twice as fast as the original variant. Also, we've heard that vaccines are effective against severe disease and hospitalization, even when infected with the Delta variant. Roughly half of the U.S. population has been vaccinated with one of these effective vaccines.
Sure.
So that then slows down the Delta wave by almost exactly the same amount that the evolved transmissibility of the Delta variant has increased it. The last thing to keep in mind is that how many cases we see is a function of both how many infectious people are out circulating in the community and how many susceptible people are out there. Mm-hmm. At the moment, we've managed to bring the number of cases down relatively low. And as long as we're able to keep it low, then I think we can expect to avoid hospital overwhelm. In order to do that, and this gets to your final point, what's to be done about it? I think the answer is individual responsibility. I think that people who are not vaccinated and are eligible to be vaccinated really must do so, both for their own protection, but also for the protection of people around them who cannot be vaccinated. As you point out, this also includes children under the age of 12. Currently, we do not have a pediatric vaccine. COVID-19 does not as often cause severe disease in children, but it can. And for that reason, I think it's super important that we continue to seek vaccination wherever we can. Anyone who's not able to be vaccinated needs to take special precautions, such as wearing a mask.
One last question. And again, thanks to all of you for taking the time to have this conversation. I think it's clear that you're all in agreement that the vaccine is certainly the number one tool to protect us all from COVID-19 original strength and Delta as well. But what if you can't, for whatever reason, get vaccinated? Or what if you're one of these groups that has the hesitancy founded on whatever reason? What would you say would be the number one or the best thing you can do just to protect yourself and those around you from this virus? And I'll just start with you, Dr. Priest.
Let me just say that what you're specifically asking, I think the American Academy of Pediatrics has already had to address, and that is, you've got a bunch of vulnerable kids, and although, admittedly, the disease may be less severe amongst those kids, we don't know with the infectivity of this particular variant, and some of the very likely subsequent variants, what's going to happen with the susceptibility of children. So, the answer, and the American Academy of Pediatrics realizing that this is starting to explode, they're sort of preemptively have recommended that everybody wear masks in grammar school and as much as possible throughout the rest, vaccinated or unvaccinated, let's go ahead and use the tools that we know work, which are social distancing, frequent hand washing, get some masks that you like and try to wear them as much as you can in public. These are all continued mechanisms that we already are aware of to limit the spread of any pandemic, of any epidemic. And so I think we have to go back to those basics.
Dr. Adams, anything to add?
You know, I think that there's one stream of thought that's really dangerous in public policy in general, and it's this free rider issue, right? This idea that, like, okay, I'm not going to take the risk on myself of making a decision in this case, it's the getting the vaccine because everybody else around me is getting it, and so I'll be protected. But the truth is that we're really not at that point. We're not at that herd immunity level. We're only at about 40% again, in the state of Georgia and in this community. And so that's a flawed line of thinking right now. And back to Dr. Schmidtke's point, it just means that you're daily, every time you go outside, you're rolling the dice. And even a person who perfectly complies with using the tools that Dr. Priest just discussed, so mask wearing, washing your hands, social distancing, the transmissibility of Delta at this point is so dangerous, it's so high that even perfect compliance does not necessarily protect you 100% against getting COVID-19. And so, you know, I just want to just reiterate that and just say again that if you, you know, if you're a person who's eligible for it and it's been proven safe, I understand that there's still hesitancy, but it really is your best option in this juncture.
Dr. Schmidtke?
You know, we shield the people around us with our own immunity. And so if we want kids to have a successful year in school, that really means that the rest of the community needs to step up to the plate and prevent transmission as much as possible, because transmission inside the building is going to depend a lot on what's happening outside the building, because the disease does not pay attention to where those double doors are. It's coming in no matter what. And so we protect those kids and we protect those of us who are immunocompromised or have underlying conditions by sharing that immunity sort of responsibility.
Dr. Drake, you got the last word.
Chris, we've been talking today among ourselves as scientists, medical doctors, and health professionals about the importance of vaccination. And it may be the case that some of your listeners who've been kind of on the fence now understand the urgency, but we can only reach a small segment of the population. However, the contacts of your listeners is a much larger group of people. So one of the things that I would urge people to do is to engage with your family members and your friends and your neighbors. Express to them your concerns. This is an effort that we need to all engage in together as a community, and being willing to engage in open, respectful, and honest dialogue about the importance of vaccination to our society is something that everybody can do. And if everyone does it, we'll have much greater reach.
Fair enough. We've been talking with Dr. Grace Bagwell Adams from UGA's College of Public Health, Dr. John Drake, director of the UGA Center for the Ecology of Infectious Diseases, Dr. Amber Schmidtke from the University of St. Mary, and Dr. Neil Priest, recently retired emergency physician. Thank you all for being here today.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
Be safe, guys.
Thanks for doing this, Chris.